Blog Talk Radio.
Happy holidays, doo doo. Happy holidays. Hello, everyone. Happy holidays. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, December 10th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Countdown, I guess only 2 weeks left for that holiday shopping, so I hope everybody is out there shopping, spending some money. That's what we want. We have another fascinating show for you today, and we want to hear from you, so please call in and participate live on air by dialing 347-857-2710. We are here live until 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Again, that number is 347-857-2710. Well, let's not waste any time. My guest today is Dr. Fran Wallfisch, leading child, parent, and family psychotherapist and author of The Self-Aware Parent, which will be launched in December 2010. So everybody, get a pad and pencil because you're going to glean a lot of valuable information about parenting and much, much more. So let's give a big welcome to Dr. Wallfisch. Hi, Fran.
Thank you, Lauren. Good to be with you.
It's so lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Well, it's all very exciting. Did you get the proper makeup and hairstylist? You're looking gorgeous.
No, it's radio. No hair and makeup today.
Oh my God, really? Well, I'm wearing diamonds and jewels. You know, you never know who you're going to see on the radio, right?
Oh, consider it a compliment. I'm au naturel.
Au naturel. Wow, that'll get a few people calling in. See, you know what? You and I have been friends for quite a while, and I don't think I've really ever asked you how you got started in psychology. What led you to pursue a career in psychology?
Great question. I came to this naturally as a very young child. I would say since I was 8 or 9 years old, I probably loved babies even before that, but when I was 8 or 9 years old, all of the young mothers on our Southern California neighborhood block would come visit my young mom, who had 4 children, and the little tiny infants and toddlers always end up in my arms. And very quickly, we all discovered I had this ability to help babies fall asleep in my arms. So the moms would then come regularly, visit us, hand the babies over to me. I would help them fall asleep, and the mothers would have coffee with my mom.
That's amazing. It
was pretty amazing, and particularly since now in my practice, in my private practice, one of the areas of specialty I have is helping parents teach their children to fall asleep on their own. From that, I went into summer camp counseling, and then at the very young age of 17, a girlfriend of mine who had been on staff at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center as a speech therapist in child psychiatry, she called me in a panic one day and said, "We're short teachers and educational therapists in the classroom. Will you just come and be a body in the room and help manage these extra kids?" And I did, and it was amazing because I had only until that point related to kids who were, quote, normal, and these were children who were very emotionally disturbed. Some were autistic, some Asperger's, and it was unusual for me to talk to a 4 or 5-year-old and not have them answer, but somehow being watched under glass by the other psychologists and psychiatrists, they saw this unusual gift I had innately to relate to little kids, and they offered me an internship, and that was the beginning of my road to working with children and parents professionally.
Well, it's a great story. I often ask my guests how they get started in their particular fields, and it's so interesting that things do happen in our childhood that prepare us for the future that somehow we're unaware of. Only as adults can we look back and say, oh, yes, I had this innate ability to put children to sleep, and which
yes.
led to X, Y, and Z. So I'm very curious, what kind of things do you do to help children fall asleep?
That fabulous question.
And it doesn't work for adults.
I'll tell you, and it's very different from what I did when I was 8 and 9 years old. When I was 8 and 9 years old, I held them in my arms and just energized my own calm energy into the child. And that's very, very different from what I do now. The optimal way to help a child learn to sleep alone is the following. You know, many moms will breastfeed a baby to sleep in their arms and then sneak the child into the crib to avoid the child crying. And the reason they do this is because they're so uncomfortable with being the target of the child's anger / rage. And that's what happens when a baby is separated from the mom or the dad. It's only normal and natural for the baby to feel a tinge of separation anxiety. That's part of the growing process. And a lot of parents try to bypass that moment because they're not comfortable being the target of the child's anger. So they sneak the child asleep into bed, and then the baby wakes up in the middle of the night and is confused. How did I get here? I was in my mom's arms 2 minutes ago. So I teach parents first to always put the baby down, even from birth, awake, slightly aroused. So if the baby was breastfed to sleep and fell asleep in the mom's arms, then I ask the mom to just gently arouse the child enough so that the baby's eyes open and the mommy kisses the baby goodnight, puts the baby in the crib, and says goodnight, and the child knows he is separated. Then what happens is babies will wake up in the middle of the night and they want to be often held. Once a child reaches the age of 5 or 6 months, we believe the stomach is large enough to hold food throughout the night. And it's at that point that we can expect babies to sleep through the night without being fed, bottle fed or breastfed. And a lot of times moms will feed the baby in the middle of the night in the hope of calming and soothing the baby. But in fact, they're stretching the baby's stomach and training the child to wake up every night in the middle of the night because they wake up from the hunger pangs.
This is very interesting.
So, pardon me?
Oh, this is very informative. I'm going to have my husband do a couple of these things to help me fall asleep. like the kids.
No more feeding. No more steak at midnight every night.
That's right. So
once we stop feeding in the middle of the night and the baby does wake up in the middle of the night, here's what I tell parents. In order to be a good parent, if we're going to simplify things, it comes down to doing two things comfortably, both at the same time. One is nurturing and loving the baby, which most parents do great. And part number two is what it seems to be challenging for many parents, and that's being able to comfortably set boundaries and limits and hold the line. So in the middle of the night, I'm a very kind and supportive empathic psychotherapist. I don't want the baby to feel abandoned. I do not tell parents to leave the room. I suggest that the parent sits on a chair about 3 feet away from the baby's crib or bed, in full view. In other words, your chair is parallel to the baby's head, so the baby doesn't have to strain to see you, and sees that you are fully committed to staying there. You're not trying to sneak out, but you're there until the baby falls asleep. And you're there as a silent, disengaged companion. In other words, you're not going to chat. The boundary is two things. One, you're not going to pick the baby up out of the crib. The baby's going to learn to toss and turn and fall himself asleep. And P.S., the tossing and turning builds frustration tolerance. It's like building muscles in the ability to tolerate frustration for children. So it's really a coping skill that you're giving as a gift to the baby when you allow the child to struggle a little, toss and turn, and fall asleep, and you're there so that the child is not alone. And then I suggest leave your robe or a pair of your slippers on the chair so that if the baby falls, wakes up in the middle of the night again, he sees that you were there, you will return, you're there for the child, but the boundary is he doesn't get picked up and he doesn't get fed.
You know, this is all valuable information. It's so interesting when a couple decides to have children, and like any career, you want to get more information on or more experience. You go to a particular school, an academic institution, or you take a course, but there's really no course to be a parent. And
that's right.
And so thank goodness that your book, The Self-Aware Parent, is coming out to help parents with these types of situations, because parents don't know.
Thank you so much, Lauren. It's so true.
It is true. You go in without any skills.
Don't know.
Yeah, you go without any skills.
Absolutely true. And what my book is about is it's a gentle invitation to parents to walk right alongside me on a very painful, courageous trip on a path of taking an honest look at ourselves. And the families and parenting that we received, the families we came from and the parenting we received, so that when we do parent our children, we then have the freedom of options. What we can do is choose to repeat a lot of the things that were done to us by our parents, or make the choice to do it another way. And the only way to have choice is by taking a very hard and honest look at ourselves. And that's not so easy to do, and I think it helps to have someone walk alongside you with non-judgment, because the bottom line is, under stress, we will automatically repeat something like a variation of what was done to us, unless we've looked at it and explored other options.
I think,
and at the end of,
yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was just going to say at the end.
I think just observing parents and with their children, I think a lot of parents want an easy way out, or they want to be the friend of the child, because, like you were saying, setting boundaries, that children know what buttons to push with their parents, and
yeah.
I think they learn this easy on. And so if a parent says, "Listen, Bobby, don't do that, or I'm going to take away your toy," and that child continues that behavior, and the parent doesn't take away the toy, so then the child learns to push the parent even further.
That's exactly right. The parent you're describing is teaching the child or conditioning the child to do the very behavior you want to get rid of.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. My feeling, I don't have children, but my feeling is that as a parent or a guardian, that you teach your children, you give them confidence, courage, to be the best people they could be as they age, and then you let them go.
Yes.
And sure, they're going to make their own mistakes. You kind of have to, because that's how you learn.
Yes, and you said something really, really important. You let them go. And I think really fine parenting also is praising every increment in the child toward their own autonomy, their own ability to be independent, self-reliant, self-thinking, self-evaluating people. And that's good parenting, although, you know, for many parents, it's holding tight and staying close is a more comfortable thing to do.
Exactly. I wanted to ask you, you're the perfect person to ask this this question to, because having friends who have children and seeing, and I'm talking about a child that's probably four or five, that age when they start to engage in extracurricular activities, soccer, you know, sports, or any kind of school activities, that these children are so inundated with activities. There's school, then there's piano, music, art class, bowling, soccer, tennis, and I guess I'm just so old-fashioned. There isn't time to be quiet by yourself and be creative. Use your imagination. I think. What are your thoughts about the child?
I agree with you. I agree. I see in my private practice, I see children of all ages, and you're right that kids are being signed up for group activities, organized group activities, as young as 4 years old. And a lot of the children come into my office and complain about it. They're crying. Too many classes. I have a little girl. She's not that little anymore. She's just turned 10. But since she's 4 years old, she's been signed up for soccer. Now she takes basketball and cooking and art classes. And she longs to just sit at home and play with her dolls and do her painting and drawing. She misses that. When I was a kid, I didn't take any after-school classes.
Well, there wasn't much for me. Ballet and tap, that's about it.
Oh,
girls.
You know what? I did take ballet and tap. That's true. But I played with kids on the block in the neighborhood. And now we do live in a different kind of world where it's not so safe to do that. And there's a tremendous focus on competition, high achievement, who gets into which school, who got onto which team. It's very hard for kids.
I think so, because kids today seem to want to, I guess there's a part in all of us as children, we want to be older, and only coming from as an adult and wanting to be more playful and childlike now, realizing that childhood is so fleeting.
It's so what?
It's fleeting. It's over in a heartbeat, and then you begin to have responsibilities. A child can go and play and do all kinds of wonderful things, but as you age, you gain more experience, you have more responsibility.
Yes.
If you're the older of two siblings, and maybe you are asked to babysit a younger sibling or take out the trash, you know, you get household chores to do. So I don't know. Just seeing children, friends of my children that I know, friends of my children, it boggles the mind, and I think it's the parents who feel the competition.
I think that's true, and also it seems to me that the academic expectations, even in school, and I should say especially in private schools, has risen. Kids are getting more homework. It's harder homework than when I was a kid in school. And many kids are having tutors and prep courses. And I do think life is less free and fun than it used to be. It is more expectation, competition, just work time for the children. And you're right. I think kids are wanting a little more freedom. We also, and, you know, we're living in the electronic computer age where kids are wanting to escape into their computers. And that presents all kinds of problems, too, for children and parents.
Social skills, I notice that a lot, the lack of social skills. And I think it's also the parents' responsibility to teach that. I remember as a young girl, probably 13, somebody gave me Amy Vanderbilt's Book of Etiquette. And
wow.
I was just so shocked. I thought, what do you mean, a book of etiquette? Because my mother was always about, someone gave you a gift, you wrote a thank you note, you always were mindful of someone else's feelings and their generosity, and you responded in kind, etc. But to get that book, and I think a lot of children aren't aware of that today. And like you said, the technology prevents children from sitting with a non-object and just playing and just using that
yes.
imagination and being able to talk, to have an improvised conversation. What do you say to somebody? I have friends who ask me, Lauren, how do I need to meet a guy. What do I do? They don't even know how to talk to people.
Wow. And so, you know, Lauren, I find that the issue of parents teaching children social skills seems to be starting as young as 2 and 3 years old. It's pretty surprising that I get many, many calls and referrals from preschool teachers who complain that the parents did not socialize their children and prepare them for a group environment to relate to other kids. So a lot of children are coming to preschool where they haven't been taught to use their words and express feelings and wants. Rather, they'll grab, they might hit, there's aggression. They don't know how to resolve conflicts because the parents didn't do a good enough job of preparing these little teeny kids for a social environment.
But I also think it's awareness. How many parents know to do that?
Well, they don't know how to do it, I think. I think they know it needs to be done, and they're hoping they can pass the job over to the preschool teacher.
Exactly.
Mainly
exactly.
Because they don't know how.
But a lot of parents, both parents work. So both parents work to provide for the child. So who is left to take the child to, whether it's a kind of a mommy and me class,
mm-hmm.
or just to the
mm-hmm.
park, to socialize with other people.
That's,
I think, a problem.
I agree. There are many, many families that have a mom and dad both working now, and that presents a different kind of a problem. One is many kids are being raised by nannies or grandparents, or they're at daycare for long, long days and evenings, and the children are longing to have more connected individual time with their parents, moms and dads. And the parents come home, they're exhausted, and they feel guilty because they haven't been there all day long. So they don't want to do what they feel would be argue with the child. What is argue? It means confronting the child and helping the child do what the child needs to in terms of responsibilities. It's bath time. We have to shut the TV off in 5 minutes. A lot of parents don't want to confront the child's opposition or anger about having to turn off the TV, maybe even a tantrum. So they might let the child stay up too late or skip the bath. There's a lot of that because the parents don't want to fight with the children. And same thing with the nighttime in the middle of the night. If a child wakes up because, for example, the child maybe had a dream or a garbage truck drove by and a loud noise woke the child up, and the child's needing comfort, closeness with the mom and dad, parents are tired and feeling guilty, and they don't want to make the child go back to the child's bed, and they're sneaking the child into their bed to bypass the child's anger. And what it does is it sort of keeps the child stuck in a younger place of dependency for self-soothing. It makes the child dependent on the parent's skin contact for calming himself down rather than learning how to do it tossing and turning in his own bed.
So
does that make sense?
It does. It makes perfect sense. So what advice would you give to a couple who have just had a child? What would be maybe the most, not the most important piece of advice, but a really sound advice to get going on the right foot in raising a child?
Oh, super question, because it's the foundation of families. Here are a couple of bullet points. One is for dads to know that the primary psychological goal for this new infant is attachment to the first relationship. We think of that as the mother, the one who feeds. Generally, it's the moms who either breastfeed or bottle feed. So the main goal is for the baby to attach and bond closely, well, with the mother. And for the dads to know what their role is. So many fathers feel left out of the equation. Where do I fit in into the new baby? I'm important too. Well, the dads are very important. And the mothers need the father's attention and support to be there and nurture the mommy so she can give to that baby if it's a first-time child. Another aspect of this is for the dad to understand hormones may be flying for this mom and her moods may fluctuate and to be patient with that. And as soon as the mother is strong enough and healed enough from the birth process, I urge parents to make a regular once-a-week date night so that the foundation of the family always remains the couple, the mother and father, and it's not just the mother with tunnel vision to the new baby. That's when marital issues begin. Over and over and over, I hear from couples how the distance began when the first baby came. And, you know, sex diminishes too in couples when there's a baby. Parents are tired and moms are preoccupied. And it's very important to preserve and hold as very precious the marital relationship.
I think that's important in any relationship. As we grow within our relationship, the newness of it wears off, and so we can sometimes become complacent in our lives and are busy with work, are busy with family, and just like any relationship, you have to make it interesting and exciting to move it forward, because life does get in the way, and it has to be something that you put on your calendar to do. You really have to make an effort, and I think you're right. I think that's wonderful advice. I can't believe the time has just flown by, Fran. You are so fabulous, and I can't
believe it either.
I've
enjoyed this so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Oh, you're so welcome. I learned such valuable information. I'm going to try some of the sleeping techniques you mentioned.
Great.
I'm not going to eat the steak too late. Before we go, I want to once again tell our listeners where they can contact you if they'd like more information. You have the website at www.drdrfranwalfish, F as in Frank, R-A-N as in Nancy, Walfish, walfish.com. And they can also call you at 310-289-3221. And I want to thank you again, Fran, for a lovely 30 minutes of wonderful information for children, parents, family, and how to get started in life. And I look forward to your book, The Self-Aware Parent, which comes out next December.
Thank you so much, Lauren. And I look forward to talking with you on your radio show again.
Absolutely.
It was wonderful.
You'll keep us posted on your book.
Absolutely. Thank you
so much.
Fran. Okay.
I'd like to thank, again, Dr. Fran Walfish. You can call her at 310-289-3221. And her new book, The Self-Aware Parent, will be coming out December 2010. Thank you, listeners, for listening in. Next time, my guest will be Scott Dunlop, creator and executive producer of Bravo's hit series Real Housewives and the Oxygen Network series Addicted to Beauty. I think maybe I'll ask Scott Dunlop if he can do a real radio show host or Addicted to Beauty show, something like that. That sounds really fascinating. Wow, just a wonderful, wonderful show today, and I wish everybody happy holidays once more, and get your shopping done before the crowds gather. And
I'm so sorry. I'll shut that off.
I know. You just want to hang on. This is Lauren Leewood. Yes. Thank you for joining me. See you next time. I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. Bye-bye.